Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Youth Ministry and Mentorship 101. What is it like having an awesome Pez dispenser collection? We're going to find that out and much more as I talk to Pastor Jonathan Montez from Georgia Cumberland Conference. So don't go anywhere. Welcome back, everybody. I am joined with Pastor Jonathan Montez. Let's get right into it. I'm sure people during the intro were saying, what about that?
What are you talking about, man?
Yeah, what got you into collecting Pez dispensers,
Pastor? All right, first off, since this is a video podcast, too, I'll show you the ridiculousness that is my office, as you can see there. Yeah. I've always been a little bit of a natural collector. You know, as a kid, I collected baseball cards. And then, you know, as I got older, a weird fact here in college, I also collected some Power Rangers for a while. How that happened, I don't even know. It was just weird. I found a Power Ranger out of my place of employment. And then I put it in I actually had a Power Ranger backpack that I had for fun in college, just to be dumb and different. And I put that Power Ranger in my backpack and it went everywhere I went. And then I just started getting into those. And then my wife, she wasn't my wife at the time, but during like the first Star Wars movie, the reboot, not the reboot, but the prequels. No, they weren't the prequels, were they? Yeah, the prequels, the bad ones, as people call them. Me and my roommate at camp were kind of into that first movie as it was coming out. So she got me a little Pez dispenser, little Star Wars Pez dispenser. She got me two or three. I think Yoda and Darth Vader were like the first ones. And then I was like, oh, these are cool. I put them there. And then as I started to go to different stores, I started to notice that there were other characters and other things. And I was like, oh, the Muppets. Ooh, cool. I like them. And then it just took off from there. And it's been an unquenchable fire since then. But my wife tells me I can't have them at home, so they're at my office.
Wow. it's so interesting because and I like how it started with Star Wars. Star Wars always gets people into collecting, Lego Star Wars.
Yeah,
that's something I actually did. And I have a few lightsabers. And so
oh, really,
the collection side is coming out now that you were talking about it. So, yeah. So cool. So, Pastor, I just wanted to ask, what got you started into ministry?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good story. I think my story started at where I've had a full circle kind of story. My story started where I'm kind of at right now, summer camp. That's where my story started. And I didn't know it at the time. Obviously, it probably started even before that with my parents. I came from a godly home. My parents turned, came to the Adventist church probably about a year or two before I was born. And so they were heavily involved in church. I mean, real heavily involved in church. We were always part of Hispanic startup churches. And so they were always part of starting up little churches. So they were kind of big mission minded, but at the time, you know, it really didn't sink in. But I really feel like my call to ministry started at summer camp. I worked at summer camp for 10 summers through high school and college. And I just developed friendships and developed mission there. And the way that the directors spoke into us as workers there really just kind of touched my life. But at the time I didn't know it. Like I was telling you beforehand, I didn't come into this the natural way. My degree was actually in psychology. So I graduated from Southern Adventist University with a degree in psychology. But when I was done, I didn't know what direction in psychology I wanted to go. So I decided to take a year off. So I told God, hey, God, I'm going to give you a year. So I gave him a year. I did task force. I was looking actually to be a boys dean, but none of those jobs were opening up right away. And I was also looking to go out west because my girlfriend, who's my wife now, at the time she was at Loma Linda. So I was like, I was looking to go more out west, be a dean and something like that. And I thought that more fell in line with what I knew and kind of what I had been doing at camp and stuff. I get a phone call one day from a school out in California, like, hey, we want you to be our task force assistant pastor. And I was like, no, that's not what I do. I'm a psychology major. I'm not a theology major. That's not. And he was like, well, I'm looking at your resume. And at the time I'd worked at summer camp for 7 years and he had been a big summer camp guy. It's like, if you had worked at summer camp for 7 summers, you can do this. So I was like, oh God, what did you do to me? I told you I would, like, just a few days before this, we had a retreat and I had told God, just I'll go wherever you call me. And this was the first call I got after that. And so I went there about 2 or 3 months into being task force. It just changed my life. I was like, this is what I want to do. I stayed there for 3 years and then the Lord opened the door every step of the way for me to stay in ministry and, you know, just active. And it's just, you know, that was my path.
Wow. And this is a story I think I've heard so many times, not exactly the same as yours, Pastor, but the fact that many ministers have not had the desire to just go right into ministry, it's just God definitely calling them, is just proof that God is real and that the Holy Spirit moves, because those who are called to ministry are definitely called. They're not somebody that says, hey, I want to be a pastor, and then they do all the work, and then I've rarely heard that story, if not ever, on this podcast. So that's really cool.
Yeah, especially us youth guys. We don't, you know, we don't aren't cut from the same jib. We have to be different.
That's true. But I also got from your answer that you worked heavily in summer camp. Can you give us like a story of how you knew that this was a powerful ministry and that experience being, you know, working in summer camps and engaging with youth in that area?
Sure. You know, the story that I have is really mine and another friend of mine's. When it comes to like your everyday stuff, when you're a kid or a high schooler or a collegiate working there, you don't actually see the whole picture. Obviously, we saw kids impacted by the programming and through decision cards and giving their lives to Christ or getting baptized at camp. But it wasn't really until I started to look at my ministry change that the story really started to unfold. And I saw it in a couple of my other friends' lives who worked at summer camp as they were maybe in the finance world. And I have a friend who's a pastor now, who's a youth pastor, actually the chaplain at one of our local academies, who he was in the finance world. He was getting into that world. But through our interactions at camp and our interactions with our youth director at the time and camp director at the time, just watching the lives of my peers change at camp as they saw the mission and how that mission changed them is really the story that impacted me the most. And that's what I really love about camp. To me, camp is, it's a multi-level kind of thing. You see these kids change their lives as they come to camp. You know, you see these kids who come from broken homes who encounter Jesus for the first time. And that happens so often that it's actually hard to pick out one of those stories, how often that happens. But you see these kids open up their hearts. But it's also the staff members who, working together in such a close mission, watching them change, and watching them see the greatness of God working in their lives over the summers, to me, that's the biggest stories that I have seen is through this. And so mine and a friend's of mine's, as we change, I mean, it really changed us. Every year at camp, we would be different people. And some people would call that fake, but I feel like it was camp working on us and not us being fake. We would change. And then over time, that started to seep into the rest of our lives and seep into kind of who we were outside of camp as well. And so to me, the story is my own story of how it really changed me and focused me on a mission and not just kind of just on, you know, fun times and all those things, even though camp is fun.
Wow. It's very interesting. I feel like summer camp is something that is so essential in youth ministry. And I feel it's so many great stories, experiences come out of that. And it's great to start to hear more of it as I continue to do this podcast. So thank you for giving some insight onto that, Pastor. Another question I want to ask you is your background, as you said, is in psychology. Mm-hmm. How has that helped you in youth ministry? How do you feel like that's helped you in what you're doing now?
Well, without a doubt, man, it's helped me a ton. You know, in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, we have a ton of scholars. We're actually a pretty scholarly church. We're a well-read church, especially when it comes to prophecies and when it comes to, you know, revelation and our education. We teach our kids a lot of Bible. And I've noticed that our church is pretty scholarly. We got lots of people, elders in our church that could tell you all the beliefs and all that kind of things. And so psychology to me actually made me feel more pastorly in the way of being there for the people and their needs, being able to relate to people and seeing, you know, there's something deeper to every one of us that I think psychology speaks to and kind of helps us understand. You know, helps us understand people's pain, be able to be more empathetic, be able to counsel them. I got to be honest, there's some pastors out there who don't know diddly squat about counseling, but they're asked to counsel. And I feel like psychology really helped teach me how to counsel people, but also know my limitations to counseling. Because I had the education to know I don't have enough education to be a pro. So I got to back down at times and say, you know what, that's too much for me. While maybe if I didn't take psychology, I'd be like, no, I'm the pastor. So let me tell you what the Bible says. And while the Bible is wonderful and it gives us wonderful insight and it leads us in a direction, you know, if you don't have the training, you better back down because you might do more damage than good. And so a lot of times that psychology, I feel like it really helped me more as a pastor and dealing with everyday people. So to me, I felt like it was perfect for me in that regard.
Wow, that's so true. I think when I've taken some of those pastoral counseling classes, it's the understanding to be humble. I think that's the strong thing that I took from that. The pastor needs to be humble and understand, yes, God knows everything, the Bible is a great tool, but here's my limitations. Let me refer you to the professional. And I think when you do that, that's good territory. So yeah.
God has given us all a bunch of gifts, right? He's given us professionals. He's given us doctors. Who am I to go in there and tell someone how to get treated for a broken leg? Oh, because I took a class on health, so I know how to treat a broken leg. No, that's ridiculous. So, but we do that with the psychological aspects as well. Oh, and we're like, or sometimes we'll do it with the money aspect as a pastor. Like, let's follow biblical principles, but let's also not pretend like we know all about money.
That's right. Wow. Yeah. Just having that humility, I think is such a strong characteristic to, say, let me refer you to the professional. And yeah. So Pastor, you are the youth director for George Cumberland. You're currently in, can you let us know the area of Georgia Cumberland Conference for those who don't know?
Yeah, so Georgia Cumberland is all of Georgia. This little part of East Tennessee and a tiny sliver of one of the Carolinas. I think it's North Carolina. Tiny sliver of North Carolina. So it's not... Not too much of it, but just a tiny sliver. So that's kind of the region. And it goes a little bit of the East Tennessee up to the Knoxville area. It goes a little bit north of Knoxville, but not much. And so we have that Collegedale corridor in there and all of Georgia.
All right. Yeah. So can you give us like a little insight of what it's like in that area in terms of youth ministry?
I think it's most when it comes to youth ministry, every area is very similar. You know, this is the Deep South, but it's also a changing demographic. There's also, you know, Atlanta and Chattanooga, some big city demographics there as well. You get a little bit of everything in this conference. I mean, you get all ends, all spectrums, all peoples. So to me, you better be well-rounded in your people skills, because, you know, it's very ethnically diverse, even though people don't really think that. But, you know, you have a lot of Hispanics, you have a lot of African Americans, you have a lot of Caribbeans, you know, in the big metropolitan areas. And then you have, you know, the rural areas that's, you know, rural. You have also people of different demographics when it comes to money. I mean, it's really, you get a little bit of everything here. So at least that's what I think.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. I think it's also interesting in the fact that urban ministry is different from rural ministry, and you know, the way you engage with youth and even adults and all that stuff, because it's different backgrounds, different experiences. So what would your advice be to someone who would become that would take your place, someone who would you got, you know, blessed, or you're going somewhere else and somebody else is going to become the youth director for Georgia Color? What would your advice be to that minister?
Man, just hold on. That's what I tell people for any job, really, man. Especially when you're in ministry. I don't think people romanticize the ministry. And in some great ways, it is a romantic, wonderful thing to be in this wonderful union with God and his work. Because to be honest with you, it's his work. You know, I would say, first off, you know, be creative, be as creative as you want to be. I think God created us to be creative beings. Be humble to know that you don't know it all. Be able to work with all kinds of people, because no matter, you're going to get all kinds. Be able to work with all kinds of people. You know, open yourself up, you know, be careful always, you know, what you say, but, you know, be honest as well. Be true to yourself. I think that's the number one thing, you know, is always be true to yourself and the mission that God gave you. If you're called, he'll open those doors, right? But the number one thing I tell people is, no matter what you do, just hold on to God, right? Just hold on, because you're going to get dragged. You're going to get drugged through all kinds of situations. You're going to have your trials and your tribulations. And all you can do is just hold on, because it's going to be a ride. And I say that for any ministry. It's not just this job. It is what it is. That's ministry. You know, hold on to Jesus.
Wow, that is so true. That is so true. So I like the visualization that you're going to get dragged, so you have to really hold on tight to God, because you can't let go, because you're going to be going all over the place and everything. So.
Well, what I love to tell people about everything in life, and when pastors get into ministry and when people are struggling with things, one of my most favorite stories is the story of Jacob, right? So when Jacob is born, he's given this name that means supplanter or deceiver, right? So he's given this terrible name. So every day of his life, he's reminded that he's a deceiver, that he's a supplanter, which, by the way, is similar to the name we've been given because of our sinful lives. And so he goes through all this life, and read the story for yourself, but deception is all a part of his life. All a part of his life, there's deception, supplanting. There's all these things that happen in his life that don't go well. And then he has that interaction with God, where he wrestles with God, right? I love that story, because at the end of the story, God says to him, hey, I'm going to call you Israel. Which means a few different things. I don't know if I have the time to get into all that, but he's like, because you have wrestled with God and man and overcome. But if you are watching that, as if you're watching some kind of boxing match or MMA match, and you see Jacob come out of that, he came out with a limp. He came out exhausted. He came out tired. He didn't win. Like, he didn't. What did he overcome? And looking back, the only reason why he overcame was he just held on to Jesus, and he wouldn't let go until he blessed him. I think that's the same with our own lives, with our ministries. Just hold on to God. Don't let go. That's the way he overcame. It wasn't like he wrestled and he won, or he had some great, you know, philosophical epiphany. He didn't come up with, you know, 28, 29, 30 doctrinal standards. He didn't do that. He didn't automatically become this different person. No, he just held on to God and wouldn't let go until God blessed him. And I feel like that's something we can learn from as we wrestle with life and God and our ministries.
Whoa. I just love that illustration because I do also love Jacob as well. I love how he deceived his own father and then
and his brother,
his own brother. And of course, it not only does he not be able to see his mother again, he's deceived by his own relative, and he ends up with two wives because he was deceived in the same way as he deceived his own. Oh man. And it's like, I feel like Jacob at that moment was like, oh, I see what's happening now. I see what I've done to my own father and my own brother. I shouldn't have done it that way, because the feeling I'm feeling now is what they felt. And I love how you said God said he's overcome, but it's like you would feel like he lost that match. It was
he did.
That's right. That's right. It was the fact that, you know, God said, you know, Don is coming, I have to go.
Yeah,
but he just wouldn't let go. He wouldn't.
No. Nope.
Yeah, if this was a UFC match, his whole corner would have said tap, and if he did, and if he wasn't listening, they would have thrown the towel for him, because
that's right,
he was getting messed up. So wow. I love that illustration. That is awesome. So Pastor, this has been really cool. But I still have some more questions that I get into with you. One question I've been asking all youth directors consistently is the power of the event known as the North American Division Pathfinder Camporee, formerly affectionately called Oshkosh, but now we will be in Gillette, Wyoming, 2024.
Yeah, are we going to change the name to Gillette? That's weird.
It doesn't ring the same as Oshkosh you did, because
we'll get used to it.
We will, but I feel like it won't be this, because Oshkosh was such a unique word. I'm already getting, whenever we call it Gillette, like people making, you know, references to the company, such as the best a man can get, or confusing it with I'm a New Englander. The stadium for the Patriots is Gillette Stadium. So
yeah, that's why I don't like it right there. That's why I don't want to call it Gillette. Is that right there? So. Since you're from New England, maybe we shouldn't go into that discussion, but let's stay away from that.
Pastor, I completely emphasize, I understand that a lot of places received a lot of pain, especially the Atlanta Falcons, due to the greatness that is the New England
Patriots. Oh, there it is.
And Tom Brady.
That's why.
But yes, going into the question, were you a youth director at the Chosen Camporee, or were you?
Yes. So I was the youth director there. Now, what's interesting about my job at Georgia Cumberland is that we are a blessed conference. There's no two ways around it. So we actually have, I was there in, you know, and had some people there, but I'm not the Pathfinder director in this conference. So we have three different, this is marked up into three different areas. If you talk to Pastor Don, he's our young adult and collegiate pastor. So he deals with that. I deal with high school ministries and summer camp ministry. And then we have a Fernando Verduzco, who's our children's ministry, who deals with pathfinders and adventurers. So yeah, so I've been to two of them now, to Chosen. And what was the one before that? That was
Forever Faithful.
Was it that one? Chosen.
Yeah, it was Daniel.
Daniel. Yep. So I was able to go with those. One as a youth pastor, and one as the youth director of the conference. But I wasn't really, you know, heavily involved in the planning and those kind of things. But I was able to go, and I loved it better because I could relax a little bit after summer camp.
Amen. And still going along with that question is, not necessarily the planning, because that would take.
Oh, that's a beast.
Yeah, that's several podcast episodes of what goes into the planning on the executive team side, the conference side, even a club. The planning that goes into going is so much. But my question is, just as a witness of the event, seeing youth, young adults, just being together with other Pathfinders, how essential do you feel that event is in forming youth for the future?
Yeah, I think all those Pathfinders is an amazing, you know, ministry. And then when you get them all in that, you know, same space, all camperies, like the camperies, you know, your more regional ones, you know, so your Southern Union or even your Georgia Cumberland Conference camperies, there's a special energy that comes about with those. And it's an awesome energy to kind of tap into and to get those kids kind of, you know, on fire for Christ. Like I said, like, you know, so I think summer camp has a little bit of that energy as well, but it's not, you know, thousands of people. What I love about, you know, what was the artist formerly known as Oshkosh is that it's such a world view as well when other countries come out and different cultures come in and just the involvement there. It's just amazing to see these different cultures come together and have that unity of purpose and unity of mind. That's why I think, like, those, to me, that's the biggest benefit of these camperees, is to see that these other cultures, and when you're there together, you're not thinking about all the differences. So we can get a California church together with a South Carolina church. And what are they doing? They're trading pins and talking about Pathfinders and talking about the program. You know, there seems to be little of those controversial things that might come out in another venue. So I think it's a beautiful thing. And I think it does represent, you know, a little bit of what heaven will be like, a little bit of what the world church should be aiming for, even when they're separated by distance.
Wow. I love that. I love that you stated that. We're not focusing on the differences. We're focusing on what unifies us. And I think in today's society, I think that's really important. I think that we are really focusing on what divides us in today's society. And to have an event where there's so many people from not only this country, but from around the world who are focused on what unifies us, and that is Jesus, that is God, it's just an amazing thing. And I love that name. I think I'm going to take it, Pastor, but I will credit you. The artist formerly known as Oshkosh, or the event formerly known as Oshkosh. I'll be using that, because that's a cool name. That's a cool name. So, Pastor, this has been an awesome conversation. I think I really learned a lot from you. I can tell your enthusiasm and your love for this ministry is real, and it's contagious, and I'm so grateful for that, and I can't wait to see whatever great things are coming out of your area. And I know you have one of the greatest teams. In fact, before I get into my last question, I do have this question I want to ask you.
All right.
I am a huge fan of Pastor Don Keel. His episode that I learned from him, I said, man, I have to talk to this man again and again and again and again. He said something about how you got to be the little dog in the fight. Don't be the big dog. And that stays to me to this day in learning how to be a humble minister. Can you tell us how it is learning from him because I'm sure you work with him very often. How often do you learn from this guy? I mean, this guy has so much good stuff to get from him.
Well, I mean, he's been in youth ministry his whole life, and you know, he's a seasoned veteran, man, that's for sure. And there's, you know, he has invaluable just knowledge and stories to pull from. Great storyteller, great, you know, influencer, and just, he loves people. He loves to interact with people. And I think that it shows in all that he does. And so what I've been blessed with is that I was a youth pastor in this conference, you know, for, you know, 6 years before that. So I was getting to know him then. We worked together as, you know, he was at a church while I was at a church, and then he came into this position. And so I was able to, you know, kind of see him work in different aspects. So it's been awesome. I'm more of kind of a sit back and kind of watch kind of guy to learn from people. That's kind of the way I do. I just kind of watch people and kind of do those things. But also, you know, we've had many of conversation over meals, which is his favorite way to interact with people, by the way. He is a meal expert. He will tell you all the great restaurants. Just when you come here, just know, get ready for a meal. But I do believe that's a great way to interact with people. I believe it's biblical, sitting down with people at meals and eating with them. But no, he's, like I said, man, he's such a veteran of it. He's been in the game a long time. He's learned a lot, still humble, still willing to serve. Man, it's been invaluable. It's been great to be able to interact with him.
Wow. I think it's just so great when you have an embarrassment of riches in your conference of leadership and just not only the youth getting to learn from youth, but just the colleagues coming together. And I mean, nothing's better than having a meal and having great conversation. I mean, that nobody leaves a meal, a delicious meal with great conversation with a frown on their face. And I think at his episode, I encouraged people, and I'm going to do that the same with your episode, Pastor. If you are in the Georgia Cumberland Conference and you are a youth or a young adult, man, knock on these guys' doors, and if they are free, yeah, have a meal with them. It is a blessing to do. It is a blessing to do. It's awesome to sit with Pastor Don or Pastor Jonathan. Man, I can tell it's going to be a blessing. So,
hey, man, the invite's open to you too, man. Come on down to Georgia.
Oh.
Right? Come on down. Yes. We'll have a meal with you. What kind of food do you like, by the way? What's your food of preference?
Oh, I'm an Italian guy. I love Italian. Italian.
Yes. All right. Well, but I think we can find one or two of those. It's not the strong point of Georgia, but we could probably find one. All right.
Listen, I'm open to anything that's the best. Georgia Cumberland is on my list. I will be heading down there. And yes, I will be. I'm telling you, I'll be ready.
All right.
Yes. So, Pastor, it was awesome talking to you. As I usually do on this podcast, I leave it to the host. I'm the host. I leave it to the guest.
Wait, I'm not ready to host. You're ready.
Yeah. That's right. I leave it to the guest to give some words of encouragement. You did earlier in this episode saying to hold on to God. Let's say there is a youth out there in Georgia, Cumberland, could be in the rural area or the urban area, and they are starting to, you know, really doubt their walk with God. What words of encouragement would you have for that youth right now?
Oh man, I gave my Jacob one talk already. I mean, in essence, listen, the world's going to throw some stuff at us, and especially the time we live in now, man, it really seems to be toxic. And that's why, you know, when we hold on to Jesus, we do so with an intention to looking towards him, to asking from that blessing for him. I would say, hey, don't be afraid to ask for that blessing from God. Don't be afraid to have the struggle with God. Let me tell you the second part of that story with Jacob's name. You know, the name actually means struggles with God. It means some other things too, loved by God. It means redeemed as well. But it also, one of its meanings is struggles with God. In essence, God gave Jacob, or gave Israel, the permission to continue to struggle with him. The problem with Israel is that when they struggled without him. They turned to other gods. They turned to other things. They turned to the world when God said, no, I need you to struggle with me. Because when you struggle and you wrestle with me, you will find your true identity. You will find your true self. He's not afraid of the struggle. You know, we're often afraid to share our doubts. We're often afraid to get real with those who love us, or to get real with God. And if you're struggling with that struggle, man, go ahead and wrestle, but wrestle with God. Hold on to him. He gives us that permission to struggle with him. So if you're struggling, perfect. You're right where God wants you. He's right. You're at right at the place where you can overcome. You can't overcome without struggles, right? So that's beautiful. It's right where he wants you. He wants you to be struggling, but alongside with him, holding on so that he can bless you and he can say, hey, you are no longer a sinner. You are no longer, you know, these things that the devil tries to tell you. Instead, you are a child of God. You are saved by grace through the Lord Jesus Christ. So I guess I'll give the second half of that story for that encouragement.